agenda is today. One is for review for Public Works and associated departments. So, Mr. Freeze, I'll let you take over.
Thank you. I sent you some information over the weekend, but I handed out a packet here in front of you that is a little bit updated. A few things that we need to clean up a little bit. And so I'll be presenting that on the hold on the screen, and you have a copy that you can place. First, I want to thank you for the opportunity to present again in front of you. It seems like we're here an awful lot, but this is kind of a full department review today. On behalf of the 135 dedicated professional employees of the Public Works Department, again, we want to thank the council and the administration for all the support you give us on a year-in and year-out basis. The Public Works team is becoming a stronger, more unified group of individuals. Each and every one of the managers that you'll hear today, they're all going to present their own division reports, are very expert and excellent managers in their respective areas. The thing we've struggled with, though, as a department, and we've sought other people's help on this, is basically trying to find a common theme, something that we share in common as a group within the department. Because we're so diverse, everything from wastewater treatment to the engineering standards that are used for building infrastructure. So last month we held our first leadership team retreat. We meet regularly as a leadership team, but it was our first retreat, our first chance to kind of get away from the office and having a laptop in front of us. And again, what we reemphasize the fact that we are very diverse, and that the thing that we have in common, though, is the people who work within each of the respective divisions. And so we've made a commitment to, as you can see here, in our strategic focus areas, is to manage risk, invest in sustainability, be innovative, tell the public works story, and strengthen the public works team. And I've further expanded upon that is a term that was used in our retreat was build the bench. So I like to use sports analogies a lot. And here, some of the ideas were hire the right people. That's always important. Mentor, empower, and train your staff. Hire from within whenever possible, but without entitlement. Invest in the best and take time to lead. And it was that last one that we spent a lot of time talking about. The commitment has always been there to be good leaders within the department. It's always finding the time, because we've all come from being a manager background. And it's easy to manage, and it's always easier to revert back to things that you know really well. And it's always the most difficult things to kind of advance yourself and look at, in our case, at leadership. So we've made a commitment to take the time to lead as we move forward and develop in our strategic plan. So there's three significant challenges in the coming year that I wanted to lay out for you. We have many challenges, but the three significant ones that I've identified: the leadership team, succession planning, and employee training. Four of the people who get up here and talk today will be leaving sometime in the next 1 to 5 years. We'll be retiring from city employment. As those four people exit, 115 years of service will be leaving the city. And it's very important that we, again, do whatever we can to mentor and train the existing staff, not such that they're entitled to the position, but that we have good candidates in the candidate pool for the replacement of these key leadership roles. So that's going to be very critical as we move forward in our coming years. And we've got a very good working relationship with the HR department. We appreciate the commitment that they've made to us and the team. Jennifer Simpson is our designated liaison, and her and Linda Hillenbrand have been very good to work with, and we look forward to working with them in the future. The second, we've talked about that a lot, is the development and implementation of a funding strategy for maintenance and replacement of the aging public infrastructure. I realize the dollars are tough to come by. For the 23 years now almost that I've been here, we've talked about infrastructure and what the demands are for the funds necessary to maintain it and replace it. And I realize that those funds have been difficult to come by. But at the very least, we need to have a strategy on how we're going to make that investment. We aren't going to be able to find the funds overnight. The money isn't going to grow on trees, but we can go out and pick the tree, money off the trees. But we at least need a strategy. And so some of the things that we're going to be talking about between now and budget and through the budget is that the need for streets and alleys is $30 million annually. Interceptor and trunk sanitary sewers, at least $10 million annually to, again, either upsize and or replace those for capacity reasons. And sidewalks and pedestrian paths, we talked about that a couple months ago with the sidewalk improvement district. And the last item is a new challenge that we're facing. City Public Works Department, along with RPU and County Planning, made a commitment to GIS almost 20 years ago. It started out as a concept, and it has evolved to the point now that we rely on the geographic information systems that basically are the data associated with all of our infrastructure. Our staff relies on that in a daily basis. There's more demands for the data and the use of the data by not only our staff, but by consultants. We are finding that our GIS QA, QC, quality assurance and quality control of our deliverables is not as good as it should be. There are too many people touching the data and not being responsive enough is how they manage it. So we can give out some data and a consultant can use it, and 6 months later they give it back to us and the data is already outdated that we gave them because the county updates their data, parcel data in particular, monthly. So the old adage, garbage in, garbage out, if we're not providing good information in as input, the output will not be as good as it could be or should be. We're looking forward to finally being able to develop with the IT department mobile tools, development, implementation, and support policy. We're talking, and you've heard other departments, you heard RPU talk about their use of mobile tools such as laptops and smart tablets and things like that. They figured it out. We haven't necessarily figured it out on the city side. Different operating systems, their SAP, or Oracle, but the firewall issue has been a very big challenge for us. We've been ready to do this for 2 years, and we're still struggling to be able to have the capability for our field people to use the tools that are available to them to be more efficient. And then again, this kind of gets to the issue of the protocols for importing and exporting of GIS data into and out of the system. So that's kind of a new thing. You haven't heard too much about that in the past. It's becoming more and more a critical item for the department. So as I said, I'd be happy to answer your questions right now. That's the short version of the presentation, but each of the division heads would like to come up and talk to you about their respective departments, and if that's okay, we'll move on to engineering.
Engineering section, we've got 40 people. I'll try not to sit in your way here. 40 people, 6 sections, busy 2015. Hopefully, if you read through, hopefully had the time to read through our information here. You'll see that the first 2 sheets of paper kind of outlined all of the things that we've been involved in. Bullet format, significant accomplishments. What I'd like to do is to turn over to page 3 and just kind of summarize for you, because you had indicated that that was important, is our operating budgets. So we have 3 operating budgets that impact the engineering division. We've got the engineering operating budget, traffic operating budget, and the water resource operating budget. So 2015, we were under budget significantly. Almost most of our budget is made up of labor. Those 40 people, that's what makes that up. We were under to the tune of about $500,000, $500,000. We had, thankfully, we appreciate you, had authorized 2 additional staff members. Those, we tried to work as early as we can and with our human resources team. Priority-wise, they just didn't get filled in as timely of a fashion as what we would like down in engineering. They got filled in the priority flow that the department set. And again, we set priorities for filling those as a department. We also had 3 retirements. So between the the additional two people plus the retirement people, we just gapped the entire year, 2015, with a lot of staff vacancies. And so we were under budget by about $500,000. I promise that won't happen. But we do appreciate the two additional staff members we got in 2015. And as we indicated in that promise to you, since that time, we have not to date, we have not contracted out construction oversight for any city project. So again, we're living up to the promise that we made to you at the time that you approved that. Turning over to the challenges then, as Richard kind of indicated, recurring themes here. We've got four items that we'd like you to think about, and the recurring theme of infrastructure funding. You're going to hear, I think, all of the division, as well as Richard, echoed that. We have a system of public infrastructure that is crumbling, and the streets from the, both the top down as well as the bottom up are crumbling. Now Mike does an excellent job. He's going to talk about keeping those surface condition to the optimal that he can within the confines of the constraints that he's being allowed, which is money-driven. Richard indicated that we need to the tune of about $30 million. There's a chart in your package there which indicates the annual need. Based upon the 500 miles of street that we have to jurisdictionally take care of, based upon the age of those streets, based upon the backlog, a lot of these streets have not been touched structurally touched in many, many years, some in excess of 50 years. And so to do that, to really adequately take care of these streets, we need, instead of $9 million a year from sources like federal funding, state aid funding, and whatnot, makes up that $9 million, we need to the tune of about $30 million. That makes a shortfall of well in excess of $20 million. We have a whole other presentation that we'll come and deliver at some point in time to you.
Truth hurts.
Just in the other categories of their infrastructure funding, I just to refresh your memory, I know that you get a lot of facts thrown at you from time to time. Sign replacement is a federal mandate. It's a federal mandate. We have more than 25,000 signs to take care of. Again, we've got that crew that does that, but we're not sufficiently funded in that. And to accomplish that at our current place would take in excess of 20 years to accomplish it. The ADA requirements to take care of push buttons that signals, take care of corner ramps, truncated domes. Again, federal mandate that says we must do that. At the current pace that you're funding us, it would take us in excess of 40 years to make all of those improvements. We don't think those are sufficient. Then I'd like to focus, unless you have other questions, I'd like to focus in on item number four of those challenges, staffing. Probably our greatest need within the engineering division is a dedicated grading engineer. Troy Erickson does a marvelous job. Troy picked up a lot of Barb's supervisory jobs, responsibilities, and that leaves a shortfall of having somebody totally dedicated to grading plans. And I think if you've ever gotten any feedback from the development community, the consultant community, they'll attest to the fact that grading plan is a long process. It's a very complicated, complex process. But it's probably one of our more important processes that we get it right. And we think by having a dedicated staff member, we can get it right. Another staff position that we'd like to see eventually is an assistant traffic engineer. We've got 110,000 traffic engineers every day in the city of Rochester, but we'd like another professional on our staff to help answer those comments, those concerns that we get in, that you get in. I know that George, he responds to all of you directly, and I think he does a pretty fair job of trying to get a timely response. It's not always timely, though, And the reason is the workload is huge. It's a huge workload to try to look at every traffic situation in a city of this size with just one traffic professional. Just one traffic professional. And then finally, as Richard indicated, a GIS technician. This is a synergistic effect with having this GIS technician, a professional that is dedicated to looking at our GIS visual aspects of utilities, public, all the public infrastructure that's a part of that mapping process. This will pay dividends for all the rest of the, not only the Public Works Department, but all the other departments that is, as well that rely on GIS. In a nutshell, that's all I have. Questions? Yep.
Can you talk a little bit, you skipped over it, number two here, the building quality infrastructure, where you talk about the
city owner process?
Yeah, the new pilot program.
Yeah.
Rather than wait, okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
We actually briefed the community of consultants, developers, and contractors a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, out at Cascade Meadows, well attended, probably in excess of 100 people there, kind of gave them a short update 6 to 8 weeks into the process to say what's going well, what kind of things stumbled or fumbled, how we had to tweak the system just a little bit. We're doing that. We're still tweaking it a little bit. But I think everything is generally positive.
Okay.
We promised them that we'd come back to them at the end of this coming year with metrics and with another presentation. We'll do the same thing with you as well.
Great, thank you.
Next up is Mark Baker, who's going to talk to you about the land development division.
I saw Tony's PowerPoint, so I'm going to keep my pretty short. The land development division, we're only 4 full-time staff. But what we lack in numbers of people, we make up for in the volume of digital and paper documents that come out of our area. We're the staff that deal with the issuance of the sewer and water connection permits, the driveway permits, the obstruction permits, all of the legal documents that come out of public works, the agreements, the contracts, easements, deeds, anything along that nature, as well as the staff helps administer the snow removal process for sidewalks. We do research for other departments and for public works regarding right-of-way and things that are needed for city projects as far as acquisitions. We help maintain various layers of in the ArcMap system, so other staff have access to data regarding city projects and just information regarding various parcels themselves. We deal with the accounts receivable as far as invoicing and collecting development charges that are applicable to properties. One of the main things that's happened, or that's in the process of happening, we're going through a pretty big transition as far as some of the duties that have historically been done by our division versus what we'll be doing moving forward. So in the 2015 budget process for 2016, the council approved a new administrative one position for public works, and that's funded through, recently we started collecting fees for issuance of permits and doing inspections for the various permits. That position itself isn't part of the land development division. It's going to be within the administrative division. But what that position does, and we're very thankful that you approved it, it will free up the staff that we have in land development to focus exclusively on land development related issues. So historically, 3 of the staff in land development also were the sole source of reception and clerical duties within the department. We didn't have a dedicated person that's what their primary job was. We're hoping in the next month, hopefully, we'll have that position hired so that the remaining staff can focus more on technical and just things unrelated to the clerical end of it. One of the other major things that Public Works staff was involved with in 2015 that has just recently started to be implemented is the AS400 system that we've been using for 30 years, 40 years, ever, which don't tell IT, but I still have it on my system because some things I like to still access that way. We switched over to a new program, Logisoft, where the several communities in the Twin Cities are using in other counties, and it's going to be used initially for all of our assessment-related activities to keep track of projects that need to be assessed for city work or development charges that are assessed by agreement. So that was a big transition to get all the data over from the S400 into the new system and then to get that up and working. As part of that, one of the staff members in the division, the permits clerk, she's taken on some additional responsibilities that historically have been done by IT and by the clerk's office. She has the expertise with that program, and so she's going to be helping out some of the other departments, particularly parks and building safety, with some of their processing. As far as challenges, just with the additional development that we don't see slowing down anytime soon, it'll just be trying to meet people's schedules, you know, just trying to get the documents put together and things processed in a time frame that the development community expects, while still maintaining the safeguards that that we need to do for the city. So, I didn't have anything else unless there were questions.
Questions? All right, thanks, Tim.
Next up is water reclamation.
And we start off with listing some of our goals for planting. We have a lot of action items we have for our plant each year. At the end of the year, we do an evaluation. We like to see how we did in light with those goals. So a lot of our accomplishments are going to be listed under those titles. The first one is just past year plant performance. We are the water reclamation plant. That's all the important ingredients we have to monitor for: DOD, TSS, phosphates. We've met all the limits calendar year 2005, as we have every year for 16 consecutive years. It's only 16 because we only started monitoring 16 years ago. It's more than that. We don't know how long it is. But we're nationally acclaimed right now as one of the leading municipalities for meeting that limits. Under planning and CIP projects, just some of the things to point out there, over $15,000 rebates. That's mainly on lighting efficiency upgrades. All of our exterior lighting, interior, and also the air compressor. Where the reason that's a key thing is that's a 1980s facility. And a lot of our equipment at the plant, the majority of it is installed in 1980s, just because it's very old. So we're systematically going through and just picking out things that are no longer serviced and upgrading them. Key thing there is that the new compressors, we're able to drop from 100 horsepower to 50 horsepower, savings of $37,000 a year in the reduced electrical cost. So moving on to operations optimization, one of the key things there is, you know, we have reduced chemical costs, but all these things are really tied together. We'll talk about this in a bit. Because we got some efficiencies, some optimization in our operations component, we're able to produce more methane gas means more heat, and less electricity, and less natural gas. So a lot of things are just tied together. Now, as far as all the operations and the things that we're doing, most of these things are tied to the MPCA. We have an agreement with them on things we're going to be doing over the next 5 years to get ready for the permit. Career development, HR initiatives, point out there, we lost two of our key operators, 100 years experience, less than 9 months. There are 6 staff promotions that resulted in retirements. And one of the things that's meant is that on a supervisory level, we've had been much more cognizant of what people are doing because we don't know yet what people don't know. And you know, the operation of the plant, we've had a long history running very well, but right now there's a lot of new operators and it's a challenge. Electrical, maintenance, electrical are two top people, both retired in the last 6 months also. So we're going through a real challenging time. The good part about it is that the team is really fired up about this. A lot of people are stepping up. We've hired some really good people, and some good things happen. Under learning and training, that's just some of the outreach that we've done to establish that as one of our goals to get back. We are the largest municipal wastewater treatment facility in the state. That's a technical term because Twin Cities is their district.
Special district.
A special district. So we're the largest municipal, so, and we should be giving back to the state, and we do. And each year we check ourselves to see how well we've done in that, but that's one of our goals. And we're in line with what we hope to do. Under regulatory and compliance, the key thing there is we did a permit application for a new permit last year, about a year ago. We're hoping to get that permit approved sometime last quarter, maybe of 2018. That's what it's looking at right now. There's going to be some new effluent limits set up at that time. And once we have those, then we'll decide what we're going to, or how we're going to accomplish it.
Just like to say one thing, I think between Chet and his staff, and Brown and Caldwell, and Nancy Burke, who you've all met in the past, they've come up with an excellent game plan to the point that the MPCA is listening to us. And that's really a critical step in any sort of negotiations with them, that they really are interested in what we have to say and the information that we're providing and some of the questions that we're asking. And over my years of experience, and probably Chet's too, it's never really been quite that type of a relationship. It's more a relationship where they tell you what it is you're supposed to do, and they really don't seek a lot of feedback. Well, this time around, they're really listening to us, and we really appreciate that, and hopefully that's going to continue as we move forward with this new permit.
And what it seems to be, Richard and Council, what it seems to be is we've developed a really technically expertise team, and they're listening to us because we're speaking with authority, and they have to listen because what we're saying, we'll back it up. And so we've backtracked several times. The process is going slowly, but we're getting it right. And right now, I probably have four or five email communications per week with various people within the MPCA just to check on the status. And as part of the process, the governor this last year had some listening posts who came on. He wanted to know why there's such an outcry for some of the new lower limits. And all around the country, one Rochester, and we presented that, a bunch of people presented. Governor appointed a liaison just for this issue because of the feedback. A lot of lobbying groups got involved. And since then, that liaison has come to a plant and he wanted to find out what was really going on. There's some misunderstandings. There's a treatment plant is not a treatment plant. Different treatment plants can do different things. So our approach with them has been to find out what our breakpoint technology is, what we can and can't do, and work with them on that. So, I'll touch on a little bit later. Moving on to the laboratory, just getting accredited. There's quite a bit of new analysis we started doing as part of our agreement with the MPCA. We told them that, we believe some of the data they had was limited, and we had pointed out some things that needed to be studied. So we are voluntarily going out and doing additional sampling, giving them the results so they can get accurate data for whatever it is they come up with. And we're accomplishing that. Biosolids, key point there, analysis efficiency is $103 a ton per 18. The only thing of significance there is that it means if we have a really stormy wet fall, we can get it accomplished in less days. Part of the summary, water reclamation plant was $185,000 under operational maintenance budget in 2015. And that budget was reduced by $269,000 from 2014, which was reduced a little bit from the year before. Most of the reductions are a result of process optimization changes. We would have had an increase for $451,000, but we had a very large increase. We've been experiencing 15% increases in our billing rate from our pool for the last 4 years, and it's gone from $600,000 to over $1 million now. And so that's been eaten into our reductions. Going down, employee services. Again, like Doug pointed out, the only reason that's down is because we didn't have a full staff most of the year. contractual services. We're doing more things in-house, same with materials and supplies. Included sewer collection here because we're undergoing some slight organizational changes within Public Works, where the water reclamation plant is going to provide more oversight to the sewer collection. It's all, they're normally together in most places, and how we develop Public Works is not necessarily that way, so we have a position for a sanitary sewer engineer for this year. We're going to start to get more oversight to that component. Debt service was way down, but that's just because of a one-time loan being paid off. Revenues projected was 21.5 million, came at 23. That's because we've had rate increases, and also we did have quite a few PIF fees come in, and that made a difference. And that does, and we're able to reduce our rates because of that. Reduce the rate of increase. Right now, with the water conservation, we need to have a 3 to 4% increase each year just to make up for the reduced revenues because of the water efficiency, because of the work that RPU is doing. So challenges, 2015, 4 employees retire, 108 years experience, 4 vacant positions, so the new positions, you know, it's gonna be a challenge. The good news is, the process started already, it's really going well. We are really focused on getting more efficient. It's a lot of fun, got a great team, and it's going well. Equipment, majority of the plant's equipment was purchased in 1980, along with the buildings. Right now, facility plan needs to be determined, needs to be completed to determine what process can be replaced or upgraded. Part of the agreement we have with the MPC, we have to find out what our plant is capable of doing. Because of the breakpoint technology, a facility like St. Cloud can make some modifications to the process and do biological phosphorus removal and biological nitrogen removal. We can't do that with a high purity oxygen plant. The technology does not allow for it. Now, we might be able to do some modifications, but from partial, we don't know yet. So we got a new database management system, and we're doing some modeling later this year, and working with Brown and Caldwell, we will find out what our plant is capable of doing. And with that information, we can let the MPCA know, and there can be some adjustments made to what effluent is based on what they're capable of doing without the major $100 million tax expansion. Which gives us to regulatory limits. Again, permit expired in 2015. Some of the new limits that were thrown out earlier. Before we got on better terms with the MPCA, did involve numbers like 100 million. Right now, what's the most likely outcome right now is there's a possibility we can accomplish the reduced phosphorus in-house. There's a possibility. We won't know yet. Because the timeline right now is for a permit to come out sometime in 2018. At that time, we did a compliance schedule, which would tell us when we have to meet the limit. Normally, there's about a 5-year compliance schedule, you know, 2 to 3 years, 2 years for design, 2 to 3 years for construction, you have to start meeting it. So sometime in 2026, if we have to have a new facility to meet some effluent limits, they would start to be go online. At that time, we can take a look at what are these things we're doing. But this is all laid out in a schedule that we gave the MPC and what we're doing. First step is the data, come with a plan, pump the options, and then negotiate with them. So it's all laid out right now, and we're on target.
So for example, we pointed out to the MPCA that the current debt schedule on the 2006 expansion of the plant expires in 2026. That would be the soonest we would like to incur new debt. Okay. The answer is always no unless you ask. So that's what we laid out there, and we haven't, you know, that's kind of what we're working towards right now. And we've been told yes or no, but if we at least laid it on the table that we'd like to not to incur a lot of new debt until the current debt's paid off. Because of the impact on sewer rates. And again, they're listening, so that was very, very well received.
Questions?
Yeah. Are we facing any impairment challenges outside of phosphorus, or right now is it just phosphorus?
Officially, It's just phosphorus. What the MPC is trying to do right now is they had a law passed, we call it the certainty law, and what they said is if you voluntarily agreed to a limit for biological phosphorus removal and biological nitrogen removal, they would not impose any stricter limits on you for the life of the plant for 20 years. And this, there are some municipalities that are going to take them up on that, and some already have. The issue with the city of Rochester, well, just to follow up on that, nitrogen is not on the target yet. That'd be for our next permit cycle.
Okay.
That'd be 6 years out. But if you voluntarily agree to it now, then they'll leave you alone for a long amount of time.
Okay.
Nitrogen is a more serious issue for Rochester than phosphorus. There's things we can do to creep up on the phosphorus. Nitrogen, we have a high purity oxygen, depresses the pH. It just, until about 5-6 years ago, there was no place in the country that was able to do biological nitrogen removal. Right now, we have a one stage process where we take all our nitrogen, convert to nitrates. So we have a very, our effluent limit for ammonia is very low, and we discharge nitrates. The second process is to feed that back in the system and convert the nitrates into nitric gas. We are not capable of doing that, but once we get our modeling done, we will find out if we can do it partially as a side stream process and perhaps get low enough to meet what the MPC would allow. And that's the discussions we're having with the MPC. We're working actively with them, telling them what we plan on doing, and they've been very receptive. It's actually been very brief.
How about the, in terms of the impairment, I mean, my understanding is that at the output of the plant, the water's not really that impaired, but once you get to like Lake Zumbro, it's a lot more impaired there. Is that accurate, or how would you describe that?
There's a lot of things you can be impaired for.
Yeah, okay.
When they took pictures, when we did some major presentations on the state of the river and the lake, they took some pictures on the outfall of the plant, and they said, look at all that plant growth. And we pointed out that the plant growth they have there are plants that only grow in very clear water. The clarity of the discharge of the plant is much clearer in the water in the river. If you look at overheads, you can just see the water getting dirty. But that's not the only thing in the water. There's also the phosphorus. But the clarity is really much better. The phosphorus and the discharge of the plant builds up as it goes towards Lake Zumbro. It picks up additional phosphorus from other sources. MPCA does not know. We do not know where that's coming from. So we started a program this in the Frostman out this year.
Mm-hmm.
To do some sampling because the main period they're interested in is from June to September. We're going to have the answer hopefully by the end of the year. We're working actively with the MPCA to find out where it's coming from. Right now, the evaluation of the state of the plant life and the invertebrate life in the Zumbro River, this is the standard for impaired, and we are right there.
Okay.
You know, we are, you know, if there's five different indicators, three sales that are good, and two said we're not too sure. So we're taking a very close look at the MPC. We want to find out where we're really at. Our feeling right now is that the river is not impaired, but the lake is impaired, which is, there's just different issues. Let's just get the issues and find out what we need to do from there. The lake is being drained. That's been having an effect. We were asking the MPC to do a study to find out what dredging the lake effect that's going to have. We don't know. They don't know. So there is going to be a study that's going to happen after July and to find out where we're at. And once all these things are done, we have active data, then we can come before council and tell you exactly where we're at, and they can develop a permit based on that.
And last question. I mean, I've taken a bit of an active interest in trying to avoid that $100 million capital cost, too, and I know there's a lot of interested parties in the community with the Watershed Partnership. We've talked a little bit. Is there some point where we can kind of get the interested parties together to kind of give everyone an update on where we are and what our options are?
Well, we've had several RAPS meetings already where we have all the parties involved, the farmers. You know, for us, it also involves Lake Zumbro, so Lake Zumbro people, the Watershed Partnership people, Stormwater, and we all presented our stories and talked about some of those things. But just to give you an idea of things that we'd like to do in the future, depending on where it comes out, because once we have our permit, then we know, and it's going to be phosphorus at this point, we're going to know we have to get rid of an additional 5,000 pounds, 2,000, you know, whatever it is. We have been getting rid of about 250,000 pounds a year of phosphorus since 1983. And that's another cost of $1.63 per pound. And that's ongoing. We anticipate over the next 10 years that cost is going to rise. These are all in 2015 dollars, about a little over $2 a pound. If we get a limit of, most likely the limit we're going to get right now based on all information we have is to go from a 1 milligram per liter down to around a 0.8. If we do that, that will bring our cost up from $1.63 a pound up to $2.85. And the reason I'm going at all of this is that if we have to build our $100 million expansion, that brings the cost up to $18.82 a pound. Now, some of the trading options we could have, there are, you know, farming communities that like to trade some options with us. We could also plant some perennial crops on marginal land. That cost would be $36 a pound rather than the $1.63 we're paying right now. Buffer strip, if we were paid up that put in, that's $82 a pound. Cover crop on short season crops, that's $337 a pound. Cover crop applied on corn and soybeans, which is a very good thing, that's $2,617 a pound. All these options have zeros on the end. And for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is that anything we do in-house, we do it one time, we pay for it, and then our cost goes down. It's a 20-year life cycle, but after that, the capital cost is gone. All of the options for trading involve eternity, because you have to trade every year. It doesn't go away. Now, we have been talking to the MS4 people. If there is a way that we can do something in-house, just with some stream bank restoration or something like that, and that's going to be permanent. And then it can also be used as a way maybe to beautify the river going through the city. I don't know. I'd love to talk to someone about that. But that could be exciting, and that could be if our plant's capable of reducing, let's just say, 4,000 pounds, we need to get to 4,500. The remaining, you know, just a short number, we can consider some of those options.
Again, kind of put this all back into perspective, though. There are three wastewater treatment plants that discharge to Lake Zumbro, the city of Rochester, the city of Byron, the city of Pine Island. If we contribute less than 10% of the total phosphorus load to Lake Zumbro between the three of us, closer to 5% than the 10%. But we're the only three that are being asked to do something, the three cities and their municipal wastewater treatment plant. So even though we might be looking at a total investment, principal and interest of $100 million, it's an attempt to address 5% of the problem. And so again, that's why, as we talk to MPCA, we try to keep that frame of reference. Is that the best investment of public dollars? And right now, it is their current approach, but we are trying to get them to look at other options, other ways to make a better investment of public funds than just in a single point source discharge that contributes less than 5% of the total phosphorus to the lake.
And to date, they still haven't provided the scientific rationale, have they?
They have data that they've collected over the last couple decades. And that's, again, one of the things that we're asking them to do is let us work with you to provide more current data. A lot of things have changed in the last 10 years. A lot of things have changed in the last 5 years. But let's move forward. So, again, we hope that, like, the governor's initiative of buffer lands and things like that might take hold. Chuck was at a conference recently where there's experimenting going on in farm communities, where they basically said they have techniques and approaches that can limit, that would eliminate phosphorus discharge from farm fields. Well, that's tremendous. You know, at what cost is, you know, still subject to a lot of discussion, but I mean, that's a significant move in the right direction. So again, this is a group that's working, trying to address the other 95%.
That raises the question too. What, how much water do we discharge from our plant on a typical day?
Before last plant expansion, we were averaging 14.5 million gallons a day.
Mm-hmm.
Today, thanks to conservation efforts and optimizations, last year we averaged under 12 million gallons.
How much does a quarry?
There are some quarries that are rated at 14.5, they're averaging about 12 million. All the quarries combined discharge more than Rochester Wastewater Treatment Plant does. Now, what they're discharging, the MPCA does not test for any of the components. They're not testing for phosphorus and these other components. So we don't know. That's one of the things that some of our operators in their leisure time are going up and down the river and taking samples just because they can and we're interested. We don't know. MPCA does not know. We told them what our suspicions are, and they encouraged us to go ahead and grab samples. Let them know. They'll readjust the model. They thought they were done running the models. They've agreed, in principle, to run some additional models once they have additional information. So we are trying, you know, desperately to get some information. We don't know what it's going to be. It's going to be what it is. But there's a possibility that it might show that there are some other sources that maybe with some very minimal treatment, the issues of the river can be rectified.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just have a question about the impaired waters, and I too heard that the data was not supportive, that all of them were, and you have found some interventions that lessens that risk, am I understanding correctly?
Well, part of it is we built a new plant. Council very well. We spent a lot of money. We built a new plant, and we are releasing a different type of phosphorus now. We're releasing, our new plant is releasing a biological phosphorus, which breaks down very readily. The old plant was a chemical phosphorus, very stable, and that affects the models. And we don't know how. So we need to get some samples to find out what the difference is because of that. The sampling they did was they checked all the invertebrates, they checked what fish are in a river, tells you what the health is, the plant life, all these things, and they're analyzing that. And right now, it appears like the river is in okay shape. It's not impaired, appears. The lake is, and there does have occasional nuisance algae blooms. It does. Dredging is going to have some effect. What's the solution to that? We're not really too sure. We are asking some questions. We're going to run some runs and see if they get some answers to it.
So I hope you continue to hold hands with MPCA.
Yeah. They are working very well with us. This is a new experience for us. And we probably share some of the fault, but really, we've reached out to them, and they're responding very well.
Thank you.
All right.
Next, we'd like to talk about fleet and facilities, and Monty Meyer is going to lead us through that.
May I ask another question, Mr. Rogers? You know, this $100 million, you've gotten some break of, 20, 25 years? Or explain that to me.
Well, there's the number that was thrown out initially is that we're going to have to go down to a 0.2 or a 0.3 milligrams per liter phosphorus. We can't do that with our plant. The type of plant we have, we can't get there. Since we've entered our discussions with them, we have been told that we could get some credit for, if they give us a 0.4, they know that we're going to have to go down to 0.2 most of the time because plants get upset, so they know we're going to be below it, so they put a multiplier in there. And so basically they're taking a 0.4 right now, is the most likely one, and they're backing it up to a 0.7 at least. And so I'm giving you the number that we're going to have to meet, knowing that to meet a 0.7, we're going to be down around 0.6 lot and bouncing around. So they factor all those things in. Now, Rochester is being hurt with that. Most places have a default of 2.1. They're giving us a 1.4 because we run our plant so efficiently that we don't have a lot of fluctuations. So that's something to be negotiated yet, but they've taken a look at over the last 10 years and how closely we run to our limit. We're very close. So the more we found out, like in the last year, we think we might be able to just do it through process changes. And we're going to know in about a year and a half. And the MPCA is willing to wait until we get that answer. So we're hoping not to have to spend that.
I heard $0.
Right now, it is, optimistically, I think we can do it. But
perfect.
We're not going to know until
I heard commitment.
We'll be doing our part.
Just for clarification, though, that's not spending the $100 million. That's your cost.
True.
It's probably about $60 million in capital and about $40 million in interest on your bonds. So that's the total cost.
And additional operating costs.
That's much less over 20 years than the approximately $900 million on the other ones that you pointed out.
Yes, and that $100 million is an FDCA number. They told us what it would cost. They, you know, that's, they have charts, you can look it up, and that's what the cost would be in their numbers.
Okay, fleet and facilities.
So good afternoon. As Richard pointed out, I'm Monty Meyer. I'm responsible for the fleet and facilities at Public Works, so the maintenance and service of the big yellow trucks, the construction equipment, and also some of the small vehicles you see around town. So currently located at the PWTOC facility directly north of RPU, which is a 198,000 square feet facility. There we house about 125 employees and also 300 plus construction equipment vehicles. And the departments that have vehicles in there are the Public Works, and we also do have some fire trucks that get serviced out there, and we also have police cars out there. So currently we have four service technicians, better known as mechanics. We have a parts clerk, an office service coordinator. We have a custodian, a payroll clerk, a facility assistant, and a facility systems technician. And this was a new position that you guys approved last year, so we appreciate that very much. So to manage our fleet and facilities, we have some key metrics that we review. Where I get the staff together every morning, we have a startup meeting after we get the morning rush over, and we'll bring all the mechanics and the parts clerk in the conference room, and we go over all of our open work orders. We go over our mean time to repair, so how long, once a work order is open, how long it stays open, that we can close it. We go over any parts issues, our inventory carrying costs, and also our planned and unplanned maintenance. So during this meeting, or in 2014 and 2015, I have comparisons underneath our past year performance. So in 2015, we improved our mean time repair by 20%. And like I said, that's our average days that a work order is open. So we went from 2.92 days open to 2.33. Then our average work orders in 2014, we had 2,007 open work orders, and in 2015, we increased it up to 226 work orders. The only issue is that we did increase our warehouse carrying costs by $10,000, but this was offset by last year we decided to start doing work outside of Public Works. We started doing work for the Rochester Public School System, and we were able to create $12,000 worth of revenue there. So pretty proud of that. And so overall, for fleet performance, has been performing really well. We do want to start working on our planned and unplanned. Last year when we were here, we had 50% planned work orders and 50% unplanned work orders. This year, we were able to inch it up slightly by 52% planned and 48% unplanned. So overall, on the fleet department, we're doing really well. And then on the facilities, we also had a successful year. Since we were able to hire the facility system technician, we were able to reduce our outsourcing costs by $35,000 in contractors last year. We also reduced our utility expenses by $53,000 for the PWTOC facility. So some of the causes that we figured was able to help that was we did have a more milder winter last year, but we also did reset some of the HVAC points as far as the heating and the cooling to help reduce the cost. So overall, facilities came in $152 under budget. Future challenges that we do see in fleet, I know I talked to you about the preventative maintenance here shortly, but we really want to focus more on that, but we're having a difficult time doing it with four technicians. When you look at the industry standard, for the amount of vehicles that we're servicing, we should have 5.6 mechanics. And if you round it up to 34, which generally people go with, you actually have 6 mechanics for what we're doing in 4. Now, the good news is we are able to offset this with some outsourcing work, or else we can also work more hours to achieve it. But our guys are really working efficiently, and we really would like to add another mechanic to our facility. And we're also having issues When I'm away at meetings like this or overlooking at equipment, inspecting it, some of our pilot-run vehicles, I'm not able to be in the shop at that time. So it does lack the leadership that we would like to see, managing more of the day-to-day activities. So with the preventative maintenance help, as far as adding another mechanic and also the lack of supervision when I'm not around, we would like to hire one mechanic, more as a lead mechanic, to help make up the deficiencies. And then the third challenge we're running into is repair parts prices are increasing. And I only have one parts clerk that can actually that actually manages all the parts in the facility. And so he doesn't have really a lot of time to focus on negotiating prices and things like that, as well as myself when I'm busy doing the day-to-day duties. So I would like to team up with him and we can concentrate on this next couple of years more on reducing some of the prices with all the buying that we are doing. And then also on the fourth challenge, we have some off-shift time that we do not have parts put in the facility at all. So Tony's in charge of the transit business where he has mechanics that are going into our parts room and picking their own parts on off hours from our hours, so from 5 to 7 in the morning and in the evening. So by having another parts clerk in the facility, we could spend more time negotiating for our costs and also have coverage in there to make his mechanics more efficient so they don't have to spend time picking parts. And then as far as the facility challenges, we did like bringing more work into our facility. We found out that we're really efficient at the bigger trucks and the heavier construction equipment. We would like to keep going after this. As Richard told me, when I started, this facility was designed to run three shifts, and currently we're only running one. So I would like to possibly bring in more work from some of the other divisions throughout the city. But to do that, we definitely have to have another mechanic on hand before I can even go after any more help. So I think this would overall lower overhead costs for the facility because you'd be running it more efficiently because we're still heating it through the evening hours and cooling it, as you all know. I would like to hire one mechanic and a warehouse clerk in 2018 as well for those upcoming years. Any questions?
Lonnie's approach basically is he needs to earn the respect and the he needs to earn the business of other city departments, and he's been able to do that with some of the work that's actually that he's doing for CHEP and others. Again, the school district has been very, very receptive to our ability to handle maintenance on some of their larger vehicles. We've had several talks with the police department that that's always a work in progress, and we haven't been able to accomplish that yet, but we continue to work to again, try to earn the business of other city departments and other agencies, governmental agencies, because the facility is sitting there, and like Monty said, it's sitting there vacant and unused for a good portion of the 24-hour day work cycle. It might as well be used by someone, and it's a matter of convincing them that we have a facility and the technology in place and warehouse space that we could, again, earn their business.
And if ever anybody ever would like to come out and see the facility, I'm glad to give you a tour. See how nice of a facility it really is, especially for fleet maintenance. I don't think you're going to find one much better. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to infrastructure maintenance with Mike Burns.
The infrastructure maintenance team continues to focus its efforts on maximizing and preventative maintenance efforts by identifying the areas of greatest need, coordinating and scheduling the work in a timely fashion, utilizing the budget dollars to the fullest extent possible, making the most impact on our aging infrastructure. Basically, what our team has been doing for the last several years is focusing our attention on the mill and overlay areas that we do each and every year. What we do, not just the pavement part of things in the milling and overlaying, but we also do curb and gutter, defective curb and gutter replacement. We do tuck pointing of the catch basins. We place I&I barriers and reconstruct the chimneys of the sanitary sewer. Storm sewer castings also get removed and replaced. And we also coordinate with the park department doing tree trimming in all those areas. So when we're there doing the construction work, all the trees have been trimmed above the area. So a year prior to us doing any construction activity at all, we give the park department a schedule of needed areas to do the tree trimming also in those areas. By improving our efficiencies and timeliness of spot patching, crack sealing, chip sealing, block sealing, cul-de-sac, milling, overlaying, and tuck pointing, and upgrading the manholes, not only have we increased the life cycle of our infrastructure, but are greatly improving the rideability of these streets, along with reducing I&I and the sanitary sewer. So all these things that we're trying to do in each one of these areas is hopefully, as you can tell if you drive on some of the streets, the rideability of the streets is much better. On the sanitary sewer, we've checked notice throughout the years that some of the I&I numbers have gone down, so some of the things that we're doing are increasing. I've got four pictures that I gave Richard a little bit late that just kind of show a pictorial of where we're at this year in 2016. Anyhow, the colored areas that are on this map basically show the areas that we, the ones that are in purple are the known overlay areas, the ones that are in other colors are the chip seal areas that we're doing this year. This is just a 2016 map. I've got a 2017 and 18 is the next map that Richard has. He'd open that up. It shows where we're heading in 17 and 18. The map after that one is, we'll show you, shows you just kind of the pictorial of the city of Rochester and how much we actually get completed with $2 million a year for our infrastructure budget. This is the 17 and 18 areas that you'll see. All the colored areas are the things that we're going to touch in 17 and 18. We have those identified at this time. With the same budget that we've had this year, we can touch those in 17 and 18. So it's actually pretty impressive when you put it on a map to see how many streets we actually touch. The next slide is where we've been in the last 5 years. It shows a map of what we've touched the last 5 years. So these are the areas that have been, we've either milled and overlaid or chip sealed the last 5 years in the city of Rochester. So as you can see with the amount of money that you allocate to us each year, those dollars are spent wisely, and we're trying to touch as many streets as we can. Preventative maintenance is huge, as you know. The last slide that we have is a graph showing the miles and the dollars that we spend each year to get those that work done. Our past year performance, after Richard can open that up, and you can see that the milling and overlaying we did last year was $1.5 million in milling and overlaying, which is 12.9 miles. We chip sealed just over $500,000 worth of work, and that was about 21.4 miles of chip sealing that we did last year. Our total CIP was about $2 million. We had budgeted $2.4 million in the CIP, so we were under about $3 million worth of work. Our operating budget for 2015 results end of the year variance is $402,000 under, so we were under last year with that budget. The year-end shows an overrun of approximately $1 million that we had for that's all done?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I had a little bit of work that everybody changed prior to the meeting or whatever, so.
Talk to finance, you're in good shape.
Okay. The end of the year variance in the sewer department was $109,000. We had judgments for a sewer overflow in the Willow Heights area of $11,000. Depreciation and interest overrun was $24,000. Contractual services, we ran over $39,000. And pension liabilities was $33,000. Some of our future challenges, forecasted CIP budget for 2017 through 2019, line item number one is $200,000. It used to be $2.4 million. This last year in 2016, they infused $1.9 million into our operating budget, which actually works very well, so we can schedule and coordinate any of the work that we need to have done, and it gives us a firm budget that we can try to meet. To continue to catch up on the preventative maintenance needs, we need to continue to budget at least $5 million a year on a yearly basis. That'll just give us a chance of trying to keep up with the deteriorating streets. This is preventative maintenance only. That's not, you know, reconstructing streets or anything like that. The areas that received an overlay about 10 to 15 years ago in the core part of the city are in dire need of something again. It can't be a mill overlay. Not only is the pavement, the curb and gutter in tough shape in some of these inner parts of the city, but the underground and everything else is 50 plus years old. So we need to take a firm look at what we're going to do with those areas. We spend a lot of time responding to numerous complaints on streets that do not have curb and gutter. Those that had bituminous curb at one time have deteriorated to the point where there's nothing left of the curb. With no curb on the edge of the streets, there is no barrier keeping vehicles from driving off the edge of the road. When it rains out, the stormwater, of course, runs along the edge of the road, carving away the road edges to the boulevard, making a mess out of what once was a grassy boulevard. These old areas of streets also need to have something done to them, some major improvements. We're going to be doing some milling and overlaying next year. Basically, on South Broadway, if you turn west on 19th Street, there's like 5th, 6th, and 7th Avenue. North of 20th Street, no curb and gutter. Basically, culverts that are underneath driveways, every time it rains, the shoulder washes out. We get calls on those constantly. Those should be reconstructed. We're just going to probably end up milling and overlaying them again because we don't have the funds for that. So these old areas of town need to be taken a look at, and something different needs to happen in those areas. We continue to have challenges with... Did I skip the page? No? We continue to have challenges with staffing our sewer crew during the summer construction season. Our sewer crew consists of seven operators on a day shift, all who are involved in removing and raising manhole castings during the street milling and overlay process. This minimizes the attention we can put towards the normal sewer maintenance activities, which needs daily routine maintenance. We are in the process of realigning some of the sewer collection tasks and work direction to WRP in the future. We feel that these changes, with the addition of two individuals that were budgeted for 2016, will better allow us to more efficiently control the sewer collection system planning and its routine maintenance. For decades, the sewer collection staff time has been split between sewer and street maintenance, including snow removal. The size and age of the sewer collection system demands full-time attention of the maintenance staff. We have identified six areas of immediate concern, the first one being forecasted budget. For the infrastructure maintenance division to continue to push forward on its pavement preservation program, a minimum of $5 million is needed each year in the operating budget to complete the needed work. We continue to see a significant increase in the amount of incoming complaints referencing condition of the streets that are not on schedule for maintenance in the next couple of years due to budgeting constraints. Additional funding equals safe and better infrastructure. We continue to have the alley complaints. The alleys, we need to have, you know, several of them reconstructed. Either that or recondition some of the alley. Money needs to be budgeted to reconstruct or recondition, like I say, each year. Possibly to ease some of these problems, we could have the refuse collection vehicles stay out on the street, the main streets, and not come into the alleys. Every time the garbage trucks go down the alleys, if it's damp out or rains, or we have to go back and try to resurrect the crushed rock or regrade them, it's a constant headache. Street reconstruction CIP budget. Without a strategic plan in place or a dedicated source of funding, significantly increase the budget for CIP projects, which should be used to pick off the huge backlog of some of the major deteriorated streets and reconstruct old quarters of the city will never allow the maintenance team to efficiently focus its time and resources on strategic preventive maintenance instead of continuously putting out fires on streets that are past their life cycle. So basically, we need more money to do these types of work to stay ahead of the ball. And damage prevention, we continue to see the effects of the refuse haulers on the streets. Better control of the refuse haulers is needed, including on which streets they can haul and which streets they can't haul. I mean, when hauling them oversized loads on our street, it does nothing in the springtime to deteriorate the streets. Snow and ice control, for the snow fighters to be most efficient when clearing streets in the inner part of the city. At a minimum, we would like to see an even outside parking from December to April to allow our heavy equipment operators enough room on these narrow streets to safely remove snow. The future design of the streets is a concern also. During this DMC era, we need to take consideration of maintenance needs, not only where we need to put the snow or snow storage, but you know how efficiently we can remove the snow or how efficiently we can maintain the streets. Although often the maintainability of some of the newly designed streets is less than desirable. So they design these streets, we have to go try to remove the snow or do maintenance to the streets, and it becomes very difficult to do that type of work. In conclusion, for the infrastructure maintenance team to continue to meet the first-class city residents and destination medical center demands and expectations of the conditions of the infrastructure, we need adequate funding so we can improve the condition of our assets and not continue to fall further behind in preventive maintenance. There's a list of all kinds of infrastructure maintenance crew accomplishments throughout 2015. You can read through the list, but our team continues to strive to do the best we can with the dollars that were allocated. I think our team does a very good job of following through with needs. You know, we get feedback from the council members on important streets for them, and we try to get those in a timely fashion and going the way. Any questions in regards to infrastructure?
First of all, thank you, because you and your team are about one of the most responsive and responsible groups I have ever worked with, and I don't know if I've ever sent you anything that hasn't been addressed in a pretty timely manner. And as long as we're going to keep building more and more roads, I think we have an obligation to fund their maintenance, and the city council is falling down on that, not your department, and I hope that we both get more responsible on how we decide to build and accept public roads and how we fund their maintenance.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Tony's got 3 minutes here to finish up.
Oh, man.
I was wondering why I was left at last. Okay. Well, I appreciate being able to come here today. And numbers here, the next slide here, just to introduce you to our staff. Obviously, we report to Richard, myself, Scott Westlaw, his assistant, some of you deal with him. Brian Law is a planner that we hired a few years ago. And then we do a lot with contractors. We have First Transit and RNS, who does our paratransit, and then the air parking solution, our management lot operations. And there's some other small contracts for security and some other things, too. Those are the main contracts. I provided you a comparison of 14 and 15 because I thought that's always kind of interesting where we've been and where we're at. As you can see, fixed route revenues were up substantially in 2015. And most of that, perhaps quite a bit of it, was for the $250,000 increase in state funding. And so that is in that, you can see that down below on the state side there. So we were at about 104% of budget. On expenses, we were 92% of budget in 2015. Our expenses went down. There's a price of fuel is huge to us. At 270,000 gallons a year that we're using, just 10 cents or a dollar, whatever the change in fuel can really impact our budget. And the other thing is repairs. If engine or transmission goes down, that could be $20,000 to $30,000 expense. So most of that, those expenses were in that category. Passengers are up about 2%. And again, our passenger and our passengers we carry really reflects what's happening over at Mayo, whether they're hiring or retiring, and we've seen that over the years. The paratransit, this is the ZIP system. Revenues were also up again, 114% budget. $100,000 of that, approximately a little bit over, was from the state. Expenses were also up, though, 103% budget, and a lot of that had to do with repairs and then contract services. We do not have any denials on our dial ride system. If we can't fit them on the bus, we will dispatch a taxi or an RNS van, so we have zero denials. And then also, you know, that system is sensitive to fuel, too, but fuel was down, but expenses were up. You can see the state share going up, program revenues down a little bit, and some local tax levy. I didn't point out that last slide, there was no tax levy in 2015 for a regular route. It was about $6,000 in 2015. And passengers, that's a substantial increase, you know, 10% there, going from 41,000 to 45,000. And I wanted to mention something I forgot, this cost per passenger on a regular route system. We're at about $3.70. That's the cost per passenger. Of that, through the fare box, about $1.20 is returned. So that is a subsidized ride. When we deal with different agencies, they're looking for more of a discount. You have to remind them there's already a discount involved with that ride. On the paratransit side, this is true around the state, any paratransit, it's door to door. There's a lot more service provided. The cost per passenger is over $15. And of that, the passenger pays around $3.40 actually, it's skewed a little bit. We're able to charge agencies a little bit more than agency fare because they have typically per diem money from human services that follows that person. So that's the only exception. Just to go through some of our changes, some of you participated in these things and a lot of neat stuff in the last few years. Particularly last year, we had our first 40-foot or BRT bus, purchased 7 of them last year. Those are all in service. In December, December 7th, was, I don't know if we picked that day on purpose, it wasn't our Pearl Harbor day, but we installed the new fare boxes, and we haven't turned on all the features on those, and we're still struggling a little bit with some of the reconciling things and counting. A lot of electronics and software. It is the latest and greatest. It's called the Fast Fare System, and there's a lot of features that will be turning on in the next year or two. So, the next one is the our real-time passenger information, and I won't go to this. I almost was tempted to click onto it and show you that, show you the buses moving around there, because you can do that right today. Yes, this is it's open to the public. We've opened this in sort of a soft sell. In the next 2 weeks, you're going to start to see our PSA will go out and our advertising will start on this, and we'll be working with the passengers. But it is live right now, real-time passenger information system. There's other features I'll talk about later that we'll be introducing shortly. And then finally, this January, we kicked off the transit development plan, hoping to bring all that back to you this fall. I can't say that this will all be in the final document, but from what I see and from here from the public, I think you're going to see Sunday and holiday service, at least Sunday, expanded evening service, cross towns, which we've talked about the last go-around, increased frequency on high travel corridors. This might be Broadway or 2nd Street or 4th Street, where we run, instead of 30-minute peak hour, we go 15. And then these emerging transit corridors with BRT service. That's complementing that land use plan. We've had at least two workshops, another one coming up, where we bring in all the planners that are working on both systems so that we're setting ourselves up to match that long range plan as well. And then expanded park and ride service, so I think you can see that. So, just to talk a little bit about expanded service area. You know, our fixed route system stays within the city limits except for the Township of Marion. We pretty much covered a huge chunk of that. In the future, who knows, maybe we'll end up covering the whole urbanized area. Our Dial-A-Ride currently does cover all four surrounding townships. That's due to federal law that paratransit system must extend 3/4 mile beyond your farthest fixed route. So we really have to go outside of our jurisdiction to do that. Looking at capital investment, continued fleet expansion improvements. We're going to see bus technology changes, new types of buses, transit stations, downtown station might have to be moved or rebuilt. We don't know. It's under study. St. Mary's, a lot of exciting things that can happen there, maybe with some private partners there and clinic. And then Northwest, who has talked about some type of hub there. Transit signal priority, we have been meeting on that. We're finding out that our signal priority system, which is pretty much stroll-based, that's already changed. It's GPS, it's cell phone-driven now. So to get in on that, as we update that system, that's probably when we should do that as well. Alternate fuels, we've had some discussions here before about that. We're still monitoring the electric. We see some problems with the range, the lack of universal charging. Sort of like you buy a Chevy, but you can't go to this gas station, you know, that kind of stuff. We're looking for something universal. And then the heat. And I heard the other day that even Duluth, who had a grant to buy electric buses, is delaying delivery for a year or so because they're having some problems with aren't solved yet. Electronic bus pass technology, pay by phone, some other things that will be coming up in the future. We have that foundation that's set with this new system where we can begin to look at doing that. And then the enhanced passenger information, the real time, getting more into alerts and people subscribing, and perhaps some signage in the downtown area. And then structured park and ride, where we become a little more formal. Maybe there'll be ramps built out there to downtown. This next project, something you're going to see show up in the CIP, we are currently housing 58 buses. The garage was built for 60. We're also on the periphery parking 20 or so squad cars and the EM50. So we're looking ahead. The garage was built to expand in all directions for all different components of the operation out there. We've already laid out a 24 bus expansion to the north for the transit side, and there could be another expansion to the east in a separate building. But this would buy us some time, particularly if all the goals and aspirations of DMC, you know, if we really are going to realize them, we need to house those buses. It's made a huge difference in, we believe, the maintenance of those buses, just everything, instead of having them sit outside. So in CIP, we will prepare you for you next, in this coming August. You'll see that project starting to show up in there with probably design costs in 17 and 18. So. Going back to our staff, you approved 3 positions last year. We are hopefully filling the first one. It's just long. I think those were starting in April 1st. It's a long process. When we're done, this is what we should look like. With the new marketing outreach coordinator, who can call on people and get them interested and involved, taking care of website outreach, county and grants, and then an operations contract manager who would interface with our operators and contracts and provide a little bit more, you know, close monitoring of that situation. And I wanted to point out, too, other city support, HR, these are our departments that we are really essential to us. The legal, finance, city clerk's office, RPD, for our security and our ramps. We do a lot with our camera system. We work with them. How do you want it? Where do you want it? That kind of stuff. Even on the buses now, we're seeing more interface with them on certain issues we have to deal with. And then finally, IT is huge. There's the numbers down there. Looking ahead, what will we look like in 10 years? And this is at least in what I see is that particularly this master plan calls for expansion of service, doubling the fleet. I see us going from currently about 140 employees involved in these endeavors to over 250,
255. So, and you see the biggest categories, contracted transit employees and contracted parking employees as well. Even with going to cashierless in the ramps, we feel it's going to be a service that we're going to have to provide customer service, more of a 24/7 presence to call somebody. So I also added in here IS technology, something in a position that Monty mentioned is the idea of warranty manager. These are shared positions that right now we share them with Monty, employer parts clerk. I see that expanding. Clerk receptionist, and then warranties. And just to mention DMC planning, the studies are kicked off. The circulator, we don't know what that is yet, where it's going to be, but it's going to impact us greatly. And then the other idea, of course, how we're organized. Are we going to become, is there going to be an authority out there in 5 or 10 years? I think those are kind of questions that the council have to discuss. So, getting into the parking, we run 5,400 spaces, and then another 1,200 in the park and ride areas. This is our budget. Everything looks well. You know, we're an enterprise fund. This, I think, at the end of 2015, we had $1.9 million net revenues, and that was after over $1 million of depreciation. I think we're done very well over 2014. This year, I understand our short-term and hotel validation revenues are down somewhat, but we're very sensitive to what's going on at the Civic Center with conventions and those hotel nights and all that kind of stuff. So parking administration, obviously no revenues, but you can see the performance of the ramps and the parking lots, everything is in the green, or in the black, excuse me. And the area that we're kind of looking at right now, we're struggling with this for a few years, is parking enforcement. If we don't have enforcement, we don't have a parking program. I think we realize that downtown. Right now, though, it doesn't pull its own weight as far as citations. We have a good program. We're really ramping up the technology on that. Set the platform for the next number of years, so we'll probably see a proposal to increase those fines that will come to you in the next year, so that we don't have to subsidize enforcement with revenue operations. And then residential permit parking too. You can see that doesn't really pull its own weight as far as the parking program goes. So capital investment, ramp number 6, CJ lot. Should go out to bid by, I suppose, the end of this year. Continued new technology for payment, information, and enforcement. Demolition and replacement. Second Street ramps in the CIP for demolition. I think next year or the year after, keep kind of pushing that out. And we'll have to look at trying to replace those 435 spaces some way that businesses depend on. I guess rumors about another ramp, Center Street, maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm not perpetuating a rumor, but so all those things will have to be taken into consideration. The partnerships, the GMC, the parking study, we'll see how that goes, and then expanded structured park and rides. So just a couple of little things. Maybe, well, I think people will, they are going to notice these things. Last year, council awarded the contract to go to a wireless hosted enforcement system, and we're working through those features. License plate recognition, we've purchased those units, are being installed actually right now, I think in the next few weeks. And so we'll phase that in. Residential parking permit will become LPR driven, so that the police will be able to drive down the street and it will read who's got a permit and who doesn't. No more stickers on the license plate or anything like that. The next phase of that will be to move to overtime parking, where we can go down and check instead of chalking tires. And then finally, also, we could use it for our employee parking system. Just a lot of applications for it. Yeah. So, pay by space, we are using that on First Street, First Avenue, that area in the ramp, kind of mixed results, but So I think in the ramp, some people have a hard time understanding how that works. And then pay by phone. There's a lot of talk about credit card meters. We feel that that monthly wireless charge and data charge and capital costs aren't worth it. That pay by phone will jump over that technology. You just have your phone, pay. Save with your parking ticket. So I threw in drone enforcement. I guess very far out there. So we do working with Lanier, we track ins and outs with data. But anytime you want, somebody wants data in this shape or that, we can provide it. Lanier does a very good job of that. But we're currently serving about 2 million exits a year in our system. So, and then to the DMT pending studies. The downtown parking management study will look at the role of parking in the district, supply, accessibility, and where it should be. Centrally located, these peripheral lots, how many should there be, where should they be? I think that we have to confirm those numbers. Some of us felt that the peripheral lots had too many spaces, park and ride, and didn't have enough. And then how are we going to build those? What's the model for public and private partnership? And finally, some organizational structure, if we have an authority or an association that we work with to implement all this stuff. So, is there any good questions?
Mr. Buckbeck? I've got a couple, Tony, and I'll make them quick just because of time. But did you say security is a separate contract from Lanier? It's a Lanier contract.
Yeah, it's actually, you don't contract, they have a, I don't think they have a formal contract, but somebody asked that today, actually. But they contract with, I should say contract, they have arrangements with Premier, and they have a schedule that's so many hours that they...
And does Mayo Civic Center event, when they have events, are they working with Lanier to have the appropriate number of staff on?
Yes. And sometimes, it depends on the event. For instance, sometimes we'll have these... or the last event where everyone comes out kind of all punching holes in sheetrock. So, but we'll try and put additional staff on those events. So, both Lanier and Premier. So, and the police, they do their patrols too. So the for instance, as we move into the IP cameras, like Third Street now. RPD can look at those cameras anytime they want, right from law enforcement. That will happen in all the other rooms as well, so we'll be able to click on that and see what's going on there.
So. Kirk, that was my other question, so that's it.
All right. Ms. Means?
I have just a quick question. In the post-bulletin this past few days, we talked about the private investors in that the rail from Rochester to the cities and perhaps even down to Chicago. How are you incorporating any of those ideas into long-range plans? Are you looking at it at all?
Well, Richard might want to speak to this, but I think the comp plan realizes that there could be some zip rail. I mean, you have to, we'll have to complement that. If you get to town here, there'll have to be bus service. Probably going to be a lot of local vendors too that want to serve that center.
Doesn't sound like it's imminent or anything like that.
It's
sounds
going to be
like
covered
years.
Through DMC planning studies.
Through the DMC. Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Hickey.
Richard, for all the divisions that briefed, for the employee projections they cited, are those all in that 5-year plan?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
All right. Oh, Mr.
King. Sorry. This is really great. I think this map is awesome, and we should do a really good job of telling people about this, because I think it's one of those things that makes, it's not just that you can see that the buses are moving, it's that mind share that we have buses for people that don't always think about that as an option. So I think that's great, and I think you're dead on about the cell phone payment. We should just get, I think the system that's over by First is, it's better than paying in the meter, but the cell phone one that I was able to use in San Francisco and able to use now in Schenectady is way better than that even, so.
I would mention, it was kind of a hard RFP to put together, but the enforcement system we bought, one of the requirements was that they had to integrate with digital, that's the brand, pay stations. They had to integrate with the LPR, which is coming out of 3M, and GTEC is a software company, and pay by phone.
Okay.
So we're covered in that. As we bring those payment systems on board, Duncan, that's our enforcement, has to be able to interface. What that means is that the officer looks at his handheld, and he can tell who's paid and who's not. So all wireless things.
Thank you for allowing this time. After pretty impressive group of presenters here and great data and a great summary, we run through a lot of issues in a year in the Public Works Department, so I appreciate what everybody does, and to all you guys that are running your departments, certainly doing an admirable job. So I don't know if we get time to thank you enough. We deal with headaches all the time. We don't take time for that. I know when Joe Fitzpatrick retired, I wasn't sure how we'd ever replace him, but I'm feeling pretty good about the job Mike's doing, and you learned a few things from him, and it's like we're not missing a beat. So thank you for all of what you guys do over there. Appreciate everything.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. We have one last topic. This is the city attorney's topic.
City Council will now have a closed meeting to receive a communication from and to have a discussion with the city attorney regarding litigation strategy and the possible appeal of the district court decision in the city of Rochester versus Franklin P. Cacciotti and SJC Properties LLC, Olmsted County District Court filing 25CV157888 involving Cacciotti's demand for arbitration of a dispute involving excess MnDOT right-of-way delivered to the city.